Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 122 with me, Andy Zaltzman, here in... it's a city, two syllables. First syllable sounds like back scratcher. No, stenographer. No, Yuri Gagarin. No. Oh, none. Odd mind for none. Sounds like none. Lum. Second syllable sounds like monk. None. Done. London. London. And in the city that lives by the bagel and dies by the bagel, New York, it's the Jane Fonda de Nosjour, John Oliver.
That's right. Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Andy, it was July the 4th here last weekend.
It was July the 4th here as well, mate.
Yep.
Don't think you're so special.
Different kind of July the 4th here, Andy. Never an easy time to be a British person in America. You're right, you know, in Britain, July the 4th, it's like July the 3rd or July the 5th.
Yep.
No special.
Yeah, we don't
make
a big deal of it. Yeah.
What I'm saying is, when you live in America, one man's Independence Day holiday is another man's celebration of terrorism. I've said it. It's just each firework that explodes in the sky signifies another broken British dream. Maybe that's why they like them so much here. It has been even hotter here this week, Andy, and the New York Times decided to test out whether it was possible to, you know, as the saying goes, fry an egg on the sidewalk. Apparently, it wasn't, they said, and they showed in a photo. But the reason it failed, as demonstrated in said photo, was that they were trying to use a f***ing frying pan. Andy, if an egg cooked in a... If an egg cooks in a frying pan on the sidewalk, everyone's going to be dead.
Yeah, well, this is all the same with these climate scientists, isn't it? You know, they're always trying to fiddle the figures. That's just typical of the sceptics, just manufacturing a false result. Have you tried frying an egg?
No, I haven't, Andy. But if I do, I'll just break the egg onto the concrete itself.
I think you might have more chance. I don't know how hot it is there.
Hot.
You might have more chance maybe doing a slow scramble. Because then you probably get more egg coverage.
Splash of milk, low heat, Andy.
Yeah. I think that might be a go-to egg during a heatwave. Well, it's been quite hot here.
Right.
But, you know, we didn't make such a big deal of July the 4th, and we don't make such a big deal of heat. You know, just shows what a superior nation we are. So this is Bugle 122 for the week beginning Monday, the 12th of July, 2010. This is the last Bugle until August. I know I shouldn't treat you like that. We're taking a summer holiday for the next 4 weeks so John can kick back, catch some waves and shoot some hoops. And so I can write my show for the Edinburgh Festival and then do my show at the Edinburgh Festival from the 6th of August at 4:20 at the Stand, except Monday the 16th, until the 29th of August. This is the last... Sorry, did I say that? This is the last full Bugle until, I think, the 16th of August will be the next next full Bugle. So make the most of it, Buglers. We'll be filling up... In the meantime, with some Bugle History of the World, 2007 to 2010, over the next 4 weeks. 122, this number, Bugle, 122. Coincidentally, the first item on John's shopping list last time he went to buy some new outfits at Macy's in New York. 122. Also, you wore a tutu, didn't you, in that photo shoot? Come back to me.
Andy, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And you know what? It probably took me about 18 months to forget about it. So now I'm not due to forget about it again until the winter of 2011.
Well, whose fault is that, mate? 122. Also, the first ingredient in Heston Blumenthal's latest controversial recipe at the Fat Duck. The recipe is late 20th century archbishops in a licorice and sparrow-long confusion on an incubator of dog spawn.
Oh, it's just deliberately weird, Andy.
122. It goes on to say the recipe: mix the tutu with the runcie and reserve the Makarios for garnish. 122, of course, traditionally, also the start, the first word said in the daily Count the Testicles competition in Nazi High Command during World War II. Always started with Hitler, of course. 122. Coincidentally, the number of times Barack Obama has watched Gone with the Wind since he became president. That helps him focus in times of crisis. You can sometimes see him mouthing the words to himself to calm himself down.
Also, how's the number 122 inspired you so much, Andy?
I don't know, John. I don't know. Maybe it's the fact, I won't get to bullshit about a number for the next 4 weeks.
I think that's what it is.
But 1, 2, 3, wait for that in August. 122, coincidentally, also the number of blasts on the defibrillator it takes to wake Joe Biden up in the morning these days. But he's getting on and he gets awfully tired being vice president. But it is partly because he stays up all night playing internet cribbage. So this is the week beginning Monday the 12th of July. Happy 467th wedding anniversary to King Henry VIII and Catherine Parr. Sixth and final time lucky for Big Henry. And third time lucky for little Kathy P. Well, I guess given that she ended up that marriage without a marriage-ending neck injury, she's got to be pretty pleased with how it turned out.
Top story this week, monarchy in the US! On Tuesday, Andy, the Queen, yep. Not Latifah, not the rock band. I'm talking about the original QE2 before there was a boat. The actual Queen, Andy, finished her North American tour by visiting New York. She was here for just 5 hours, but what a 5 hours. She really classed this joint up in the time she was here. I had to work, Andy, on Tuesday, so tragically, I was unable to go and pay my respects by lying down over a puddle of hobo urine and have her step daintily over me.
Really? Apparently she was pretty gutted that she had to work as well, so couldn't come to see you record the Daily Show.
Instead, I had to be in the office, gazing longingly out of the window across town, my nose pressed up against the glass, hoping to catch just a glimpse of the greatest woman in the history of humanity. And it's such a shame she couldn't stay in New York any longer. She could have taught this city a thing or two. I'd like to have seen her get into a street corner breakdancing battle in Harlem, spinning on her crown before moving seamlessly into the worm to the cheers of onlookers, then jumping up and waving her hand in front of her face saying, "You don't know me. You all don't know me. You have literally no idea who I am." I didn't want her to just throw out the first pitch at the Yankee game, Andy. I wanted her to pitch the first six innings, dusting players off the plate with her inside fastball before being ejected from the game for deliberately beaming Albert Pujols in the head.
Well, I've heard that she had been practising that and sort of model herself on a cross between Cy Young and Edinson Volquez.
I'd like to have seen her slamming the hood of a taxi cab as she was crossing the road, screaming, "I'm walking here! I'm frickin' walking here! Get me a quaffy and a frickin' donut, you schmuck! I'm walking here!" Or, Andy, staring demonically into a hotel mirror with a self-made handgun contraption on her arms, like De Niro in Taxi Driver, saying, "Are you talking to one? One doesn't see anyone else here, so you must be talking to one. Are you talking to one? Who the f*** are you talking to if you aren't talking to one?"
But then none of that happened, did it?
None of it. Well, I know that all the first ones didn't happen. Right. I'm not sure about the final one.
I guess we won't know that until the official Secrets Act clears that information in 30 years' time.
That's right, it's just an incentive to keep living.
And how does she go down stateside, John? Because obviously, I mean, you'd have thought maybe she would have been arrested as some hangover from the 18th century squabble.
Well, she's, you know, people didn't really pay much attention to her.
Really?
And she comes to America quite a bit. She has a horse farm in Kentucky.
Does she? She's,
yeah, yeah.
Well, and
well she says a horse farm, but it says it's a stud farm.
Yeah.
I don't know what. If it's the other one, I don't want to think about it. But
right.
This was also even more strange that she was ignored. This was actually her first visit to New York since 1976. She hasn't been here since I've been alive, and
that
changed,
can't be coincidence.
It's changed a lot over the years, which yep. Her Majesty seemed to notice because as they were driving through Times Square, she was heard to say, "This place used to be swarming with crack dealers and prostitutes back in the day. I'm telling you, Giuliani has f***ing ruined this city."
Is there any chance that America might, you know, re-adopt the British monarchy on the back of this successful PR stunt?
They don't think, you know, it's a tricky time to come. Just after July the 4th, when I think people have really been consciously remembering how little they wanted anything to do with the monarchy. So it's a question of bad timing, really, on her part.
But I would raise the argument that is always raised over here whenever people talk about getting rid of the monarchy.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have in charge of America, the Queen or Sarah Palin?
Well,
you know, I guess
some people in America would say, how about Sarah Palin as the Queen?
Well, that might spice up the monarchy. I guess, I mean, she could quite easily, intellectually, pass for Prince Philip's daughter.
The temperature here on Tuesday reached 103 degrees Fahrenheit, and there were some real concerns for the Queen's health. Richard Quest, the CNN journalist and cartoon Englishman, was on the news.
He's
saying,
an old buddy of ours.
Yes, right, Westy. Andy. That's right. Strange man. Strange man. The real talking point, he said, if I may say, is how Her Majesty will put up with the very hot temperatures in New York. I asked the palace exactly that question. They laughed in my face. Good for the palace, Andy. Heat can't stop the Queen. She's prepared. Whenever she's hot, she can just whip out her special beer crown. It's got two beer can holders either side and a straw that leads straight into her mouth, as well as a mini fridge on top to keep her drinks ice cold. She has her own Buckingham Palace brew that she calls the Queen of Beers. She looked unflappable under the sun, Andy. Apparently, the reporters were saying she never sweated, never looked uncomfortable, never asked for water. And again, people shouldn't be surprised by this. She actually has a water hump, like a camel, in the small of her back. She doesn't technically need to drink for 3 months. The royal family basically evolved it while they were annexing India. And again, they were surprised. There was a like general surprise at how good she looks. But why be surprised, Andy? She'll always be smoking hot. She's the f***ing queen. She waggled her way seductively around the city for 5 hours in a floral print dress that left everything to the imagination. She was wearing a hat that looked like it had come straight from the Guggenheim gift shop and a cheeky little come worship me smile. A number of journalists during their commentary stated that this was likely to be her last ever visit to the city, which seemed to basically imply, catch her now before she's dead!
Oh, does it not merely imply that she is not joining the Yankees this year?
That's true. Well, not yet. Let's wait for till after the All-Star break. The highlight of her visit, though, was undoubtedly the speech to the UN, her first since 1957. There were big screens either side of her and people listening along on earpieces. And it was actually taking place during the Holland-Uruguay semi-final, and it must have been very tempting for them to put the game up on the screens. She'd never known. She had her eyes on the page the whole time. It's obvious that her speech was going to be incredibly dull. She can't say anything other than generic statements of well-wishing. I was at least expecting the Dutch delegation to get busted by listening to the game commentary instead of her and screaming at one point, "Yes, goal! Get in, you f***er! Oh, yes!" Just at any point during her speech.
I had heard that if Uruguay had won, the Queen would have married Princess Anne off to Diego Forlan as a just a little congratulatory present.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a double-edged sword.
For whom?
Political fashion news now. And the Iranian government has issued a list of government-approved haircuts. I mean, it's magnificent. It's worth looking up. It looks like a poster from inside a barber shop in the 1970s, from a simpler time when you would just point at a number and say, "Do that one."
Is that what people still do?
I don't know.
I haven't been into a hairdresser's shop this millennium.
Is that true?
It is true, yeah.
That's great.
Well, the wife sorts me out.
There are some hairstyles, therefore, that are now banned in Iran. They include ponytails, mullets, and elaborate spikes. It's like they're pretending 1980s soft rock never happened, Andy.
How can they do that?
It's airbrushing musical history. The mullet is gone.
The white snake mean nothing to these people.
The mullet. One must now choose business at the front or party at the back. Never the twain shall meet. Rest in peace, sweet mullet.
This is what happens these days, John.
Yeah.
This is a classic example of too many politicians with too much time on their hands. And the same thing happened here under the Labour government. They all felt they had to do stuff, and as a result, they just crapped out legislation like Catholic rabbits, roughly speaking. Every minor gap in conversation in the House of Commons was filled with some piddling piece of lawmaking, like you can't protest within 20 miles of Westminster unless you've knitted your own placard. Part government wanting to control public dissent, part well-meaning effort to boost the struggling wool-making industry. Also, you can dig a hole in your... You can't dig a hole in your garden without first getting written permission from your local worm habitat protection agency and then subsequently having it checked by the police to make sure you haven't filled that hole with severed limbs. So, I mean, this is just the Iranian government doing the same, just excessive legislation. They're quite in favour of Elvis-style quiffs.
Yes.
Which could be a very interesting new direction for Islamic hardliners. And are they going to go with the hips as well? I mean, that's the big issue here. But it's very hard to spout misogynistic fundamentalism when you're gyrating to a rock and roll groove.
Well, that's right.
But I've always found that myself, anyway. I've tried. Believe me, I've tried.
They've said this is an attempt to rid the country of decadent Western cuts, and the Culture Ministry has produced this catalogue of haircuts meeting government approval, and both side partings and, as you say, Elvis quiffs are in. So, you know, let me get this straight. The Culture Minister is getting rid of decadent Western cuts by promoting the Elvis quiff. Will he be banning Reebok shoes while promoting the high-collared sequin jumpsuit as well? He also announced that using hair gel is within the law, right, albeit in modest quantities. It basically seems that the Iranian government want their entire male population to look like Danny Zuko from the movie Grease. Not a bad look.
I'll take your word for that, John.
No.
Yeah. Are you a big fan of that? Big fan of Grease?
Well, listen, Andy, that's a rock-solid film. Rock solid. Summer loving. I mean, come on. Come on. A spokesman for the ministry said the proposed styles are inspired by Iranians' complexion, culture, religion, and Islamic law. Missing out, crucially, and John Travolta as well. John Travolta back when he was incredible. Sandy, can't you see? Ooh,
well, it's not just hair that the Iranian government style regulations apply to. They've also banned UGG boots with miniskirts, rugby socks with Y fronts, shoes with wheels. I mean, don't they want their children to get to school on time? And McEnroe headbands with jacket and tie. Those are out.
Oh, come on.
Those are out.
Come on.
Either or.
You might remember that an Iranian cleric accused immodestly dressed women of causing earthquakes and other natural disasters earlier this year. If that's the case, then what on earth have men been guilty of causing by frosting their tips?
Doing what, mate?
Cool. To frosting their tips, Andy.
Right.
I think that's where you kind of go a little bit blonde on the top of your hair, but I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, it's not some new, more humane version of circumcision.
No.
Right, okay. Italian road news now, and apparently Italy is considering banning all drivers over the age of 80 in an effort to reduce accidents. Now, this is an interesting angle for Italy to take on their road safety problem.
Uh-huh.
The suggestion being that octogenarians are less alert and more easily distracted than younger motorists. Mm-hmm. I guess they've also could add to that they've got less incentive to stay alive, an increasingly morbid obsession with impending death. They're shorter too, so their sight lines aren't as good, and they're more easily distracted by shadowy figures in their peripheral field of vision that might be the angel of death swooping in to take them. I guess that's got to be a concern. Also, much more likely to forget where they're driving and just pick a direction randomly and drive into oncoming traffic or the sea. And in all probability, they could quite feasibly start crapping on about what things were like during the 1940s and crash. So I guess it's fair enough. But one possible alternative for Italy as a nation wishing to reduce, wishing to deal with its poor road safety record, and I speak as someone who has driven a bit in Italy, is for everyone there, young, old, man, woman, to stop driving like fucking maniacs all the time. I mean, sure, getting old can dull the reflexes a bit, but driving like fucking maniacs is much more likely to cause you to smash your car to pieces trying to undertake a lorry on a motorway roundabout whilst leaning out of the window trying to chat up a girl on a moped.
Good point.
And whilst age may reduce the flexibility of the joints and reduce the effectiveness of your braking and your steering, driving like a fucking maniac is probably a greater concern when flying around a blind corner on a mountain road at breakneck speed just to see what it's like.
You're right, because they said that the proposal was to stop old people from getting so distracted by modern appliances in cars. A spokesman said, we estimate that 30% of accidents are caused by these types of distraction. Looking at how fit and capable elderly people are while at the wheel is something that should be seriously considered. And that does fail to point out that the other 70% of accidents in Italy are caused by men leaning out of windows to shout sexual obscenities at young women. But, you know, they know there's no way of stopping that, Andy.
Yeah. Leopard isn't going to change its spots. Other things that Italian octogenarians are soon to be banned from include whitewater rafting, ride-on hedge trimmers, swimming whilst carrying a plugged-in toaster, pregnancy, and discussion of their increasing plethora of medical problems within earshot of the under-70s. There's two Bugle feature sections this week. One of them, obviously, is a World Cup feature section, because we're not going to let it go until it's gone.
Yeah.
And I don't think you should expect us to at this stage. But first, it's a summer holiday supplement to coincide with the Bugle summer holiday. And, well, what a summer. It's already a big summer in America with all that heat, John, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be a short summer as a result, or a long one?
Well, you know, I think it's... I think it depends, Andy. If it continues with this ferocity, I think people want it over as quickly as possible. Hopefully it'll calm down into just your standard, you know, run-of-the-mill summer. You know, yeah. Sun, late, light evenings.
Yeah.
And homemade lemonade.
Right. And because the heatwave seemed to start just after America was knocked out of the World Cup. I mean, people...
Right.
Drawn some kind of... correlation between the two.
He's suggesting it's just people setting fire to everything. That's what,
in frustration.
That's where the heat's coming from, yeah.
That's the sloppy defending that allowed Asamoah Gyan to score that winning goal. It's caused a heatwave. What will, in this summer holiday supplement, I think we need to try to teach, a little educational at Bugle, I'm going to try to teach you to a new summer skill, including making a solar-powered hat. That's a hat that casts a shadow over your face in proportion to the amount of sunshine beaming down on it. So it's a sort of flexi hat.
Right.
Because too many hats either give you... it's either everything or nothing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you really want a hat that reacts. Maybe, I don't know if it's in size of brim or opacity of brim, but, you know, it's about... I mean, in the 21st century, you shouldn't have to deal with an inflexible hat.
The seed of the idea is there, Andy.
Also, in a dry summer, we will teach you how to water your garden without wasting water from your taps or contravening drought regulations by simply diverting next door's water supply to your hose pipe and letting them deal with the repercussions. And also, indoor water skiing. We'll tell you how, using only a normal household bath and a reclaimed jet engine from a decommissioned fighter aircraft, you can set up a wind tunnel in your bathroom to recreate the sensation of being pulled along the water by a speedboat. You might need a heatproof bodysuit as well to go with that. And we'll talk about where celebrities are going to go on holiday this summer. Burmese democracy fan Aung San Suu Kyi, well, she's holidaying at home again this year. Yet another staycation for Aung San. She thought of maybe...
Okay, well, fair enough, yeah. Fair enough.
I mean, she thought, I think maybe she should change this routine, John. She apparently did get some brochures for walking holidays in the Transylvanian Alps, you know, cultural trips around Tuscany. Or snorkelling in the beautiful sludge lands of the Thames estuary outside London. Or perhaps even Vegas. But for the 20th summer break in a row, she's staying put. Well, it's just a bit unadventurous, really. Well, I guess some people can only relax in familiar surroundings, but, you know, just seeing. I think she should just get out and spread her wings a bit. Also enjoying staycations this summer, killer Charles Manson. The surprisingly still alive Lockerbie bombing convict Ali Megrahi. I guess it would look bad if he went skiing. And Pope Benedict XVI, who's just going to potter around doing a bit of DIY around the Vatican, thinking of repainting his chapel, apparently. But, of course, the big cultural event this summer, John, is the Edinburgh Festival. It's the world's biggest art festival. Here is the Bugle Pick of the Edinburgh Fringe 2010.
That's great, Andy, that's great. It'll be interesting to hear what your picks are.
Well, let's start with comedy, John, since this is a comedy show. And I have to say, this year's must-see show at this year's Edinburgh is undoubtedly... Andy Zaltzman's smash hit solo one-man show. Andy Zaltzman swears to tell the truth, half the truth and everything but the truth. I mean, we don't want to give away too much about what's in this show. And let me emphasise that is not because it hasn't been written yet. Let me emphasise that. Although sources close to Andy Zaltzman suggest it's not 100% finished ahead of its first preview tonight in Tring, Bedfordshire.
Yeah.
You haven't been to Tring? You grew up near, didn't you?
I haven't been to Tring, really, no.
Last time I went to Tring, I just had a sea of glassy eyes staring at me, completely not reacting at all.
Really?
But I was 8 years old on a trip to the world-famous Stuffed Animals Museum there.
Boom!
So I'm just hoping for a better response than that.
So, Andy, that's you said any other picks?
No, not really. No, I mean,
so
I mean, it just stands out so much, that show.
That's
really, that's the thing you got to see.
You have one pick for the entire Edinburgh yeah. festival, the biggest arts festival on earth.
Yes, 420 at the Stand.
Uh-huh.
From the 6th to the 29th, except the 16th.
And there's really nothing else that you'd recommend?
Well, actually, there
Andy.
Is one other show, also at the Stand, which is a show called Political Animal, which is hosted by a very promising young British comedian called Andy Zaltzman. Uh-huh. With a different lineup of acts every night. And it's had some amazing people on in the past, including including John Oliver. And, he's gone on to do do films. So, could be a springboard.
Film, Andy, film. You can't pluralise that yet.
Not yet, not yet.
Not till summer 2011, Andy.
Oh, yeah, Smurfs.
Come on, the Smurfs, let's make this a massive opening weekend. Other feature section now. World Cup!
World Cup, John!
It's still the World Cup, Andy.
Only just.
But it is still technically the World Cup. Tomorrow... Yeah. Saturday sees the magnificent flagship game of the tournament, the third and fourth place playoff. And then I believe there may be a game the next day too. But the point is, we're going to find out who's third and who's fourth on Saturday, Andy. And the main superstars have had noticeably poor World Cups. We think of Messi, Rooney.
Well, Messi had a strong tournament, John. I mean, this is a myth that's been peddled just because he didn't score a goal.
Others have come out of nowhere.
My point stands, John. I want you to officially back down.
Okay, I'll take that back, Andy. I'll take that back.
The others, Rooney, Torres, Ronaldo. Yep. Although Ronaldo was stymied by Portuguese tactics. Yeah. Carry on.
Others have come out of nowhere to make a big impression. Chief amongst them must be Paul the Psychic Octopus. The German octopus who's had an improbable perfect record of predicting World Cup results this year. All he's ever asked, Andy, is that people judge him on his record, not on the fact that he's an octopus. And let's hope that this success doesn't go to his bulbous, oddly proportioned head. I just don't want to see him later this year being beaten unconscious by pit managers in Vegas. The problem is, with this kind of success comes the dark side of fame, inevitably. Yep. And Argentine fans, apparently angry at Paul's prediction of a German victory, threatened his life last week, saying that they will, and I quote, cook and eat him. Even upset Germans, after they were beaten by Spain and following Paul's prediction, have apparently published braised octopus recipes recommending a paprika sauce.
Really?
That's a hate crime, Andy, and Paul doesn't deserve it. Now, most octopuses would run or slowly float away from that kind of threat. But not Paul. Apparently, his keeper remains confident that he'll continue performing his remarkable act for years to come from the safety of his tank in Oberhausen. He said, there are always people who want to eat our octopus, but he's not shy, and we are here to protect him as well. He will survive. He won't back down, Andy. He is the Rosa Parks of psychic octopuses.
He caught the credit crunch as well. That's the amazing thing. But the problem is, you know, he's got the winners right, but the scoreline's wrong. Being an octopus, the only scoreline he ever predicts is 8-0. But it's my concern is it's just taken all the unpredictability out of football. Because, you know, when we know this octopus is going to be right, what's the point of watching the games? I think FIFA need to stamp down on it. Because what is the point of flying all those footballers out to South Africa when they could have just gone down the aquarium and asked the octopus?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, where does football go from here?
Now, he has made his prediction over the World Cup final, Andy.
Right.
And Paul is going with the elegant Spanish midfield.
Right.
He's going with Spain, apparently, to win. It was broadcast live on television. What are we doing collectively with our lives? What is happening, not just to the World Cup, what's happening to humanity that we are putting faith in a psychic octopus and making time...
Is it so different from organised religion, John?
What about... No, it isn't. You're right, it isn't. But just think of the inventors of television. Think of Farnsworth. You never got the credit for inventing television. Yeah. Even think that one day, the thing you devoted your life to pioneering, that one day it will be pointed at a psychic octopus to find out who is going to win games in a World Cup.
Right, yeah.
And that will dominate the headlines around the world.
Yeah.
I think Farnsworth might just slowly put his plans for the television into a box and bury it in his back garden.
But I just say, you know, what's mean, Jesus was effectively not much more than a psychic octopus, uh-huh. If you look at it from a sceptical point of view. You know, the meek are going to inherit the earth.
Yeah.
What does Paul say about that?
Also, they did. I mean, that is how he did say that.
Yep.
They put two little. They had a water tank and two boxes with the meek shall inherit the earth, the meek shall not inherit the earth.
The confidence.
And a muscle at the bottom of each box. And Jesus swam straight over to munch on the meek will inherit the earth. Yep. That's how the Bible was written.
I'll tell you what, though. I mean, it's all very well saying these recipes, but you. Obviously, if Spain win, you want to just fry them up with some chorizo. Which is a lovely... The sharpness and the spiciness of the chorizo with the soft, milky flesh of the squid, it's an all-time classic. Well, what have the Dutch got to offer on that front? Stick him in a sandwich with some Gouda? I don't think so.
And another unusual fan of the World Cup, apparently, is the world's number one terrorist, Osama bin Laden. Apparently, he loves it. Actually, that's instantly slightly unsettling, Andy. I really hoped to be able to continue my life having nothing in common whatsoever with bin Laden. You just worry that these things can snowball quickly.
Yep.
One moment, we both love the World Cup. 6 months later, I'm in a cave on the Pakistan border plotting an attack on the West and we're both wearing friendship bracelets.
What could it not work the other way around, John? And could you not influence him?
Good idea.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you're assuming you'll become a crazed terrorist.
Uh-huh.
Why not assume that...
He'll become a mid-range comedian. You're right. It's certainly this news that bin Laden's a fan not going to help football become any more popular here in the United States. Just when you thought the US national team had given it a foothold here, out comes bin Laden saying he's a big fan. That is the opposite of helpful. Apparently, bin Laden's preferred position when playing is centre forward.
Really?
And, well, it makes sense, Andy.
Well, he's a big man, isn't he?
Very tall.
Old-fashioned target man.
Good target man, proven finisher.
Yep.
He's also not
like
alone.
He's like a cross between 1980s England stars Paul Mariner and Mark Hatley. But with
that's exactly.
With a dialysis machine.
Exactly it. He's also not alone, apparently, in the jihadist movement in terms of his appreciation for the game. Scott Attron, a terror expert, says it's on the whole their favourite thing after jihad. I mean... That really puts it in perspective, Andy. So if it was the World Cup or ice cream, they'd go World Cup. But if it was the World Cup or jihad, it'd still go jihad. I think that proves probably less about how much they love the World Cup and more about how much they love jihad. Because I'm not sure I love anything more than the World Cup.
Really?
They are committed. Although I've got to say, when they were asked that question, they kind of had to say jihad first. And I doubt that's actually true. I think they probably just said jihad and then winked.
Was it... I mean, when were they asked this? Because if it was at the end of the group stage, which had been pretty drab and quite tedious...
Yeah.
Good to see that. The knockout stage has not been great, but they've picked up. You know, maybe if it hadn't been for the Jabalani ball, it might have been World Cup, then jihad, and then the world might have made progress. So that's FIFA has that on its conscience
that's
now.
That's true.
The continuing battle between extreme Islamism and Western democracy is due to the Jabalani football.
I was reading up about bin Laden and football, and apparently when Islamists from various countries travelled to Afghanistan in the 80s to fight off the Russians as Mujahideen, they formed a mini World Cup with fighters forming teams to represent each of their countries of origin. Al-Qaeda itself had a two-team league of serious football with apparently regularly scheduled practices and weekly matches between the squads after Friday prayers. And bin Laden would use the games and the practices to instill religious lessons, offering additional treats for participants who could answer trivia questions on the Quran and the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad during breaks in the action. That must have been f***ing annoying, Andy. You're lining up a free kick, you've got bin Laden in your ear all the time asking you quiz questions about the great Prophet. He must have given some brutal team talks as well. Listen, brothers, we're 2-0 down. We got 45 minutes to put that right, and I know just how to do it. Gather round, look at the chalkboard. We need to give ourselves over to Allah, peace be upon him, and wage jihad upon the godless West. Now get out there and get stuck in! Oh, and Mustafa, you need to get to the byline more. Let's get some crosses in behind the defence. OK, gather in. On three, death to the West. One, two, three, death to the West. Allah is great!
He couldn't do that now, not with the FIFA technical area being patrolled by the fourth official. You know, inevitably he gets sent to the stands for calling for a jihad during a game. And rightly so. There's no place for that in top level football.
Politics, let the players play.
Football and extreme terrorist groups should not mix, John. They just shouldn't mix. There's no place for it.
You do not want to be the fourth official trying to keep Bin Laden quiet.
But still, you'd probably say Bin Laden might be more popular than Dutch midfielder Mark van Bommel, who was one of the dirtiest players in this World Cup.
Uh-huh.
And one of the most irritating. And he's managed hardly to get booked at all, despite basically doing nothing but kick people. He sort of encapsulates everything that's bad about football, perhaps even everything that's bad about the human race. And you know, I'm sure he's charming off the pitch. Actually, I'm not sure about that. But on the pitch, he's like a conglomeration of every single person you've ever taken an instant and profound dislike to. And that is why you should support Spain in the final, John.
Yeah. Vamos! Vamos!
That, and if you like mountains, the Spanish have got much bigger mountains than Holland, who basically don't have any. Your email now, just one, because we've over-talked on everything else.
Yeah.
But it's a very important one. It comes from David Atkinson in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, and he writes on the subject, three ways to spot a spy. Hello, Andy.
There. Whoa.
Yep.
Well, okay, David.
Okay.
Wow.
After your spying news last week, it occurred to me that there are three more ways to spot if someone is a spy.
Uh-huh.
One, moves to a country different from the country of their birth. Two, regularly socialises with powerful people, for example, politicians, celebrities and the media. Three, reports back with their findings to viewers or listeners. If you know anyone who fits the bill, I think it's your duty to report them to the authorities. Well, I think we see why he only addressed that to me, John.
Moscow. I have been compromised.
Or should I call you Vladimir? No time even for sport this week. Because, well, we've already done some sport. And it's holiday time!
Holiday!
Holiday
oh, thank
time!
God. Thank God, Andy, the book is finished. I am f***ing exhausted. Yes, so that's it, Andy.
That's
a
it
month
until,
off.
That's it until August.
Yes.
And don't forget about the Edinburgh show, everyone, 4:20.
I think it's unlikely they've forgotten about it, Andy. I mean, you've continually reminded people and you're alluding to it again now, so...
Yep.
So next time we speak, Andy, you'll be in Edinburgh.
I will be in Edinburgh doing my show. That you're all cordially invited to come to.
Uh-huh. And you'll be doing the Bugle from there?
I will, yeah.
For a few weeks.
A little distinctive Scottish tinge.
There'll be a little twang.
In the air.
Yeah. Why not?
So that's it. So over the next 4 weeks, there will be supplementary sub-Bugles with the history of the world, 2007 to 2010, which will be bits you've heard before if you've listened to all previous Bugles. But nevertheless, something to keep you going.
Yeah,
stop crying, everyone.
We need a break. We need a rest.
I need to write my Edinburgh show.
I'm going crazy.
So that's it. Thank you, Buglers. We'll speak to you again in a month.
Have a lovely 4 weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.